Hello and welcome to another cagey episode of Cineblokes. I'm Benjamin Baker.
I'm Caelan Burrows.
And we have seen, we have witnessed, we have experienced the unbearable weight of massive talent.
Yeah, and let me tell you, it has not been easy living up to all that, you know? But I want you to know, Benjamin, that I appreciate that you've taken the time to acknowledge it for everyone that listens to the show. You know, it's been a tremendous talent of me being here, you know, and right, you experiencing so, it. So
I just want to be clear. You think that you are the talent of this show. I just want to make sure that's correct, right?
Well, I thought you were saying that I was the talent of the show.
Right. So, right. No, Caelan, I'm talking about the film that we watched, not how we perceive what we do here.
Well, we watched a film with that title?
We did. look, you know what? I'm going to simplify this for you because I feel like this is going to help a lot.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was called Cage Goes on Holiday. No?
you know what, Caelan? I'm just going to go ahead and let you have it. That actually makes the most sense. And is probably a better name than The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which is quite a mouthful to say for a title of a film.
Yeah, it is.
but yeah, so we have seen the film. It is set to release on April 22nd. We were privy to an early screening, which was loads of fun. We had a great time, and we highly recommend this film. But no spoilers up top. We're just going to break down some things for you. We will let you know when the spoilers will happen. So, yeah.
Yep.
Look, Caelan, as a Cage fan, I'm very curious to hear your thoughts about the film that answers the age-old question, how much Cage could Nick Cage cage if Nick Cage could Nick Cage?
Yeah, well, I'm a bit torn on this one because, you know, it's not... I love Nick Cage for his acting, you know? And this is just Nick Cage being Nick Cage. So he's not really acting, is he? He's just there. You know, it's like one of those hidden camera shows. So, you know.
I would argue that he does quite a bit of acting in this.
Yeah, but when you're acting like yourself, is it really, though? You know?
I mean, I guess that's fair. For me, this very much felt, because I've asked that question probably more than I'd like to be honest. I've said it out loud. I've written it quite a bit of times, and this is the first time where I feel like, oh, someone actually answered the question. It was rhetorical, to be fair, but someone actually took it upon themselves to be like, yeah, no, I know what can happen. I know what you're looking for, mate. Here you go. Here's as much Nick Cage as you can handle.
Yeah, I mean, sure. If I mean, that's the way you see it, obviously. To me, this was like, again, Nick Cage goes on holiday. He was just phoning it in as himself. It's, you know, lazy sod.
I'm going to disagree with you a bit, Caelan, because I feel like there is no possible way to look at anything that Cage has ever done and say that he phones it in. That is just not something in his vocabulary and in his filmography. Even if the movie is absolutely horrible, he gives 110% every single time. So if he is playing an exaggerated version of himself, and it is Nick Cage goes on holiday, it's Nick Cage goes on holiday times 110%.
Wait a minute. What's all this exaggerated versions of himself talk? You're telling me that's not how Nicolas Cage just is on a regular basis? I find it hard to believe.
I would venture to think that he's probably a bit more normal than the way that this film portrays him.
Are you trying to say that someone wrote him?
Yes. I'm absolutely trying to say that someone physically wrote this film, granted, with Nick Cage in mind, but they didn't just like... It's not a documentary, Caelan.
I'm going to need proof on that, Benjamin. What's the names? Who are these these writers. And yeah, I did say that with quotes, with air quotes.
I get the sense that you don't believe this is an actual movie.
I don't at all.
All right. Well, let me try to blow your mind. So we'll start with writing and directing.
Okay.
So the writer and director is Tom Gormican. He also had a co-writer by the name of Kevin Eaton, who has been known for a number of things. He did a lot of writing for The Late Show. He did, what else did he do? Oh, he did Workaholics. He worked on Desperate Housewives. He's done a bunch of stuff. He's got a long list of credits. So it definitely feels like he did the comedy here. Tom Gormican is relatively new. He's been in the industry for quite a while, but he doesn't have a lot of writing and directing credits to his name. Unfortunately for him, he was a producer of the horrible, I'm not even going to call it a film, movie 43, which should be banned, worldwide. So yeah, there's that. So strangely, I feel like the writing and the directing don't really add up to how good the movie actually is. Like on paper, you would look at this and be like, I don't know who those blokes are. How could they possibly make a movie this good? But they do, in my opinion.
All right, well, look, Benjamin, if I were to go along with you on this little fantasy of yours, mm-hmm. All right, with these writers with clearly made up names, you could have done better, right? I would say that, sure, they've done a good job on writing and directing this movie, this fake movie that you say we watched, which was clearly Nick Cage's own movies. All right. But if I were to go along with you, I would say that they wrote a very funny film, mm-hmm. Giving Nick Cage, you know, ample opportunities to show his stuff, show how great he is just naturally, you know, and making Pedro Pascal just the most lovable individual in the history of ever, right?
Yes, that is absolutely true. So we will talk about the acting here in a second, but I do want to hang on this writing directing group here real quick, because as much as you don't think this is a film, just run with me for a second, right?
Yeah, no, I'm going with I'm doing it.
Are you on board with this imaginative idea that this might actually be a movie?
I am, yeah. Let's take this fantasy trip.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure you're coming with me on this one. So I agree with you. I feel like this film was very funny. I think it was written very, very well. One thing I very much enjoyed, and I just looked it up right now, but the runtime. Anybody that has listened to this show, that has listened to us talk about films, know how adamant I am about stopping this two-hour garbage that, you know, the new mark of a film has to be longer than your pee break. You know what I mean? Like, you can't go to the loo because the film is so long. But here, this movie tops out at right about 107 minutes. So just over an hour and a half. It is tight, concise. It gets straight to the point. And it's very well done. So I have to applaud the film for not dragging things out farther than it needs to be, especially when you consider that the film is written in a very kind of meta way. You know what I mean? Where you aren't on board with the fact that it's a film, but that's its intention, right? It's supposed to be something where it's like, oh yeah, this is supposed to be an event in a real actor's life. And here's what it's like. And here's somebody self-referentiating, their own, you know, experiences and their own longevity and their own career. So it's very well done, but I like that they kept it, you know, tight and clean. I enjoy that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's done well enough to where you sort of wonder things as you're watching it, you know, you're like, yeah, is this really Nick Cage's wife? Is this really Nick Cage's daughter? You know, is he like this, you know? Sort of those sort of questions. But at the same time, it's very funny. They've got, you know, access to clips of other films that he's been in, and those are constantly referenced throughout. But done in a good, fun way, in a very clever and fun way.
Yeah, it's got a lot of like Tropic Thunder vibes, You know what I mean? Where it's like, it's very self-aware of what it's doing. You know, it pokes fun at the industry. It pokes fun at actors, you know, but it also adds this kind of, you know, extreme out of this world type of element to it where you're like, yeah, okay, that's probably not going to happen. But they never lose sight of how self-referential they want to be. And I've got to applaud Nick Cage here because we're going to talk about acting in a second. But I've got to applaud him for being so willing and so open to just being like, yeah, no, let's make a movie about me. But we can mock all that. We can just take all the internet mockings and just turn it into a film. So, yeah, I've got to applaud him for that. I thought that was great.
It also begs the question, was this written specifically with Nick Cage in mind, or was it pretty malleable? Because at the end of the day, it's a buddy comedy, you know?
Yeah.
But would it work as well if it was just some generic actor? You know what I mean? Like if they weren't basing it on a real person, would it work the same?
Yeah, and I think this film is very much predicated on, when you're talking about the writing and directing, it's very much predicated on the person that they choose to highlight, right? Because Nick Cage is a very divisive actor, right? You either love him or you hate him, and there's very few people in the world that are like middle of the road when it comes to Nick Cage, you know what I mean? Like, you don't just go see a Nick Cage movie and people say, yeah, that was all right. Nobody does that. You either love it or you hate it. He's very polarizing. He's a very polarizing figure. So I feel like you can't do that with somebody like The Rock. You know what I mean? Like, The Rock's made the same movie since he starred in movies. So, like, there's no difference there. There's no filmography that you can really go through. Granted, he's got a large filmography, but you understand what I'm saying. You don't get any of that diversity to be like, oh, yeah, remember when you tried to do this and remember when you did this and all of that. It's just, hey, remember when you made the same movie for 20 years? Like,
yeah.
No, so I think Nick Cage is probably the perfect person for this. And I think you'd be hard pressed to think that this film was outlined for any actor and it just happened to fall upon Nick Cage. It feels very purposeful in the way that it was written and the way that it's presented.
Well, yeah, because you would need someone with a varied career that's also kept the nose clean. You know what I mean?
You couldn't watch this
with like Kevin Spacey. You know what I mean? Like,
well, just... I was going to say, massive debt aside, those are personal problems. You know, not sexual allegations where you got to flee the country type of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, but yeah, it's a very enjoyable. But you know, I know you mentioned your problem with films over 2 hours because you're having to go to the loo. You know, Benjamin, if you just go before, then you can go after. If you're having to go, you know, more than once in a 2 hour span, you should probably see a doctor. You know, maybe you got the diabetes, maybe you got some prostate issues.
I would agree with you if it was only for the fact that if it weren't for the fact that I drink almost an entire bottle of water within the first hour and a half, because I don't drink soda very often. So when I go to the cinema, I get a giant bottle of water. And that's the only thing that I drink. That's how I stay hydrated. So naturally, if you start tuning into that two hour and 30 minute, God forbid you turn in a 3 hour film, I'm going to have to go to the loo. It's just going to have to happen.
That's right. You don't chug it. You nurse it. You know, you sip it.
Yeah, but I'm thirsty, mate. I've got all this excitement. We're about to watch a film.
That's unhealthy. That's to be that thirsty. It's not healthy, Benjamin. I'm telling you.
You're right. Maybe I just love movies too much. You're right. Well, look, we've already kind of touched on it a bit. So let's talk about acting, right? I know you don't believe that this is an actual film, but just run with me on this one and let's pretend that Nick Cage is actually acting in this film.
Yeah, sure. Everyone in this, all the actors, the actors in this film, yeah, they was all, if they were acting, then they was good.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I agree. I know you gave a bit of a shout out to Pedro Pascal, who is the basically co-lead of the film. And I've got to say, this is the most I've enjoyed him in pretty much anything. And that's not speaking as someone who doesn't like him. I genuinely enjoy most of the things that he's done. But this was like, my God, where have you been all my life? Why are you not doing more of this all the time?
Also, you want to talk about someone with a varied career.
Yeah, right? It's just all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at his filmography. There's no through line there. She's just basically signing on for anything that's going to pay him.
Yeah, and you almost sort of expect him to be the straight man here with Nick Cage going full Cage, but he's really just, they're almost on the same level, you know? Yeah. And the chemistry between the two of them is, I mean, it's just delightful. It really is.
Yeah, no, it really is. He was actually probably the standout. I feel like I kind of knew what to expect from Nick Cage. Now, granted, that's not a knock on him because he absolutely goes full on Nick Cage in this. And I'll make the joke up top, but it really does answer that question. It is so much Cage that it's almost too much. And I don't mean to say that disparagingly, but it is a lot of Nick Cage. And Pedro Pascal is just, he's so charming. He's so lovable. He's so funny. And he meets Nick Cage beat for beat almost every single time. There's a scene we're going to talk about in spoilers where I have to go back and rewatch this film because I think I missed half the lines because I was laughing so hard watching these two do whatever it was that they were doing because they were so funny and so good together. So I would argue that Pedro Pascal is probably the backbone of this film. He's definitely one of the standouts. Did you know, fun fact, I didn't know this, but I just looked it up. He started his film career in 2005, and he's only done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. He's only done 16 films in that time period. Like, he's a superstar. He's the Mandalorian, for crying out loud. And he's only done, like, 16 films in his career in the last, 15 years or something? So he does, like, a film a year, if that. That's like A-lister stuff.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's been, you know, pretty, I mean, extremely active, you know, since he got started.
Yeah. I'm not saying he doesn't work or anything like that. It's more of like, I thought he was in a lot more, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, I thought he had the film career of Nick Cage. Obviously, he hasn't been doing it that long, but I thought it was much more extensive. And it's not. But needless to say, those two are absolutely a standout. If you see the movie for nothing else, see it for those two because they're absolutely brilliant. And I want a whole Fast and the Furious franchise of just those two in any scenario, any buddy cop movie. Just make them the new Kevin Hart, The Rock. Just pair them together and just don't stop making movies until we stop seeing them.
Yeah. Did you know that Pedro used to go by a different name?
I did not.
Yeah, apparently his early credits, he was credited as Pedro Balmaceda.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that.
And in one thing, as Alexander Pascal.
Interesting. It's all in the name.
Or a couple things, actually. Yeah, he went from being Pedro Balmaceda in 2000 to being Alexander Pascal in 2001. And then a sprinkling of Pedro Balmaceda, and then finally Pedro Pascal.
You know, look, I've always said this: it's the name that's the problem, not the talent. The name is what matters. That's what I've learned. So the film also stars. It's got some guest stars. So it's got Tiffany Haddish in there. It's got Ike Barinholt. Barinholt, I think.
What do you think of old Tiffany in this film? Because I know you just love a comedy.
So here's the thing about me and Tiffany Haddish. Not that we've got any kind of working relationship or any relationship for that matter. But here's the thing. I don't care for her on stage. I just don't feel like she's that great of a stand-up. I just don't find her to be that funny. What I will say, though, is her turn in the film is one of the better turns from a comedian turned actor that I think is really strong. Now, I'm not going to sign on to every Tiffany Haddish film because I do feel like she's a bit of the same all across the board, but I tend to generally like her in things like this. And she does fine. Both her and Barinholtz, they do fine. I will say that they feel a bit underutilized. They feel a bit kind of tacked on. And I get that you've got to kind of build this plot to be, you know, larger than life and, you know, have all these wacky things kind of happen. But they do kind of feel like they're just crammed in there. They got a couple of good scenes and then they kind of just exit the film unceremoniously. They feel like they're both very talented actors. I very much enjoyed them in this, but I almost wanted a bit more and I almost wanted a bit of a better payoff for their characters.
Yeah, there's a couple of bigger names in this that just sort of cameo almost.
Yeah, like, for instance, the beloved NPH shows up in this for Blink and You Miss Him. he's very funny. Don't get me wrong. I think this is what he does best, honestly. When he kind of, because here's the thing I love about Neil Patrick Harris is I feel like when you talk about acting, right, most people generally will tell you that he's a really, really nice guy, right? You never hear anything bad about Neil Patrick Harris. He generally gives off that everyman kind of good guy vibe. But when he turns these types of roles, because he plays Nick Cage's agent. And he's the pinnacle parody of what you think an agent would be in Hollywood. And he's kind of a dick. You know, he's kind of a jerk. I was going to say dick, and then I decided to just put them both together. So he's kind of a jerk. You know,
like you've invented a new word.
I feel confident about this one. He's a bit of a jerk in this, and it's very funny. It works for him. I feel like he did the same thing in something like the White Castle franchise. Where he's that guy. He's this crazy thing that's not like him at all. And he does very well. But it is a very Blink and You Miss Him. He doesn't have a lot to do. He's very much in the front-loaded part of the film and then kind of disappears entirely once the film really gets going. So,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So I guess briefly we'll talk story and action. We'll just kind of combine them both since it is an action comedy.
Yep. It's more comedy than action, but the action that is there is fine. It's it's nothing to write home about. It's not particularly. Look, if you go into it wanting John Wick, you're going to be disappointed. All right.
right. He's not that exaggerated. Isn't Bangkok Dangerous?
No. No. Nor is it Face Off. So don't. Yeah.
There, I will say this, there is Face Off in it, but it's not Face Off.
Yeah, no.
I found one thing I liked about this film is that the story doesn't really matter because that's not why you're going to see it, right? You're going to see it because you want to see Nick Cage basically make fun of himself for an hour and a half, right? That's essentially what you're going for. And they deliver that in spades. And then you get this wonderful addition of Pedro Pascal, you know, kind of shouldering that second role and, you know, matching Nick Cage and delivering this just amazingly charming performance where they're both so funny and they're so good together that when you really strip all of that away, the film is pretty basic. It's not very inventive. It's not going to, if you're going for the plot, you're going for the story. Truthfully, you've seen this 1,000 times. There's nothing original about the story on paper, right? On paper, it's very basic, it's very generic. But what elevates the film is the acting, is the premise, is the overall kind of added things that make it work. So this isn't really a film you go to see for plot, because you can probably telegraph everything that's going to happen in it.
You are right in the sense that they've taken Nick Cage and Pedro Pascal have taken what is, I would say, a slightly better than average script, and they've elevated it because the script does have problems. Sure. You know, there are certain plot points that have just sort of shoehorned into the film. There's like a romantic thing with Pedro Pascal's character that's sort of like, why is this here? You know, it's just sort of tossed in.
And to be fair, like the CIA thing, the whole CIA angle, obviously that's not new. You've seen that in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler. But that whole angle, it does feel kind of tacked on. I know that that's the whole catalyst for kind of driving what they're doing and their experience together. But it never really goes anywhere. It just kind of fades away into the background of the story. And you're like, but But that's the whole reason we're here in the first place. Why did you just abandon that? So, yeah, I will agree that the script itself does have some issues. Again, on paper, if you're just reading the screenplay, you can see a lot of things that don't necessarily work. But I agree, the brilliance of Nick Cage and Pedro Pascal together, they overcame any misgivings I would have about the actual film, because they're just so fun to watch that you almost don't even care that those things, you know, fall short a bit. I very much enjoyed it. I think the action is much more about being fun than it is about being good, if that makes sense. Not that it's bad, yeah. But like you said, it's not John Wick, and it's not supposed to be. Like, no one's trying to sell you this idea that Nick Cage is an actual martial artist in his spare time and can actually, you know, kick all kinds of ass when he's not acting.
But I will say it's done to a level. It's not like you're not watching like Beverly Hills Ninja or something like that. Yeah, right. It's done more seriously than that.
Yeah,
so
yeah, right. And all of it feels, you know, natural and kind of purposeful, and even in the action, it's very funny. So
almost like it's real.
Oh, no, Caelan, no. You know what? It's fine. I'm gonna let you have it. You've come with me on this journey of pretending it's a film. So I commend you for letting me walk through this as if we saw an actual movie and not a documentary of Nick Cage.
Yeah, well, just keep that in mind.
I will. I will not forget it. Trust me. Anything else you want to mention before we rate it?
No. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right. We'll go ahead and rate it. Do you have yours? I think I could do mine if you want me to do it.
Yeah, well, why don't you start, since you're so convinced this is a movie?
I am so convinced it's a movie, and I'm going to give it pretty high marks. I enjoyed this film immensely. It has been a very long time since I've laughed that hard and that often in a single sitting of a film. And not to say that other films aren't funny, because they absolutely are, but this was just, I had tears. My stomach hurt. I was laughing so hard. Like I said, I have to see it again because I missed a number of lines because I was just laughing so hard. And I just, it's one of those feel good films. And as someone who has spent a lot of time watching a lot of festival stuff, which tends to be very hard and heavy, this was the perfect thing that I needed. So there's no such thing as a perfect film, so I'm not going to go that high. I do have some misgivings about the script, but they were overlooked by how good the acting was. So I'm going to give this 4.5. Everyone should see Paddington Bear 2s.
Yeah. And honestly, they should. Yeah, you absolutely should.
Yes.
if you've not seen Paddington 2, stop listening to this right now and go watch it.
It's surprisingly, it plays a very big role in this movie.
I've also seen it. What's interesting is I've seen Paddington 2 referenced in more than one thing in recent years. And it's so weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So weird. Yeah, but it's also, it's a great movie. I mean, I've always said this. So if you've not seen it, absolutely go and watch it. And you'll be like, oh, because to me, that just makes the joke funnier, you know?
Right. If you've seen it. Yeah. And I know that you've been a champion of the Paddington Bear series for a long time prior to this film. So I can attest that you've told me on more than one occasion that if I want to be just absolutely broken, I should watch one of these films.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to think, because I know I gave The Lost City pretty high rating.
You did. You were very keen on The Lost City.
And so this was, you know, the same, if not better, as far as the laughing that I experienced and that sort of a thing. So, you know, going off my enjoyment of a film, I'm going to have to either match or go higher than I did on that, but I don't remember where I went on that. So just to cover all my bases.
It was between 4.5 and 4.75. It was somewhere in there.
I know. So that's why I'm going to give this 4.75.
There you go. All right.
Out of 5 adults eating children's cereal.
I forgot about that. There's so much that happens in this movie in such a short period of time. It's hard to remember all of it. It's good. So clearly very high marks. I think we both recommend it. What do you think, Caelan? You think it's time?
Yeah, I think it's time.
I think it's time. All right, let's do it.
Spoiler song.
All right. All right. So we are going to talk about spoilers for The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. If you do not want the film spoiled, this is your opportunity to bugger off. If you don't care, stick around. If you've already seen it, stick around. Stick around. We're giving you the warning. We're going to let you know. We're going to talk about specific things that happen in the film that you may not want to have us spoil. You want to experience for the first time. So, yeah.
Yep. You already teased everyone earlier with your favorite moment. So I think you should lead with that.
I did not know how much I needed Nick Cage and Pedro Pascal on acid on an island until now. I had no idea that was a thing that needed to be in my life. And now I just want an entire film of that. I want the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas of just Nick Cage and Pedro Pascal playing Harvey and Nick Cage as they just do a drug-filled romp through wherever they are. I'll watch that on the Travel Channel all day long. One of my absolute favorite scenes. It is so funny and so just like whatever you think it is, it's better. It just is. It's so good and so funny. And it is one of those scenes. I genuinely have to go back. I have to see this movie again because I miss most of their dialogue because I was laughing so hard. I think there was a scene where they're both sitting on a bench and they're starting to get paranoid. And they think two random townspeople are watching them and they think they're spies. And so they start freaking out. And then the actual CIA agent texts Nick Cage and he just responds, "I did acid." And it's just a text conversation. And I lost it. I laughed so hard. It was such a great scene. Everything about that scene is so funny. And then it transitions into another funny scene where, you know, Harvey demonstrates how obsessed he is with Nick Cage and he lets him into his Nick Cage throne room. And then you just see all the things from his filmography with the golden guns and the weird wax statue, like that whole sequence. It's like a 20-minute sequence. And it is just riotously funny. It's so good.
Yeah, no, it is very funny. There's the scene with them trying to get over the wall.
I remember when you watch it in the trailers, you think there's no way this makes sense. What, right? You watch it in the trailers, you're like, this is really stupid. How in the world are these people so dumb? And then when it's contextualized that they're on acid, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
And it actually makes it funnier.
And then basically having their big sort of dramatic movie moment with one man getting left behind. So, yeah. Before they realize they could just walk around the wall.
Oh, so good. It's so good. It's so funny. It is. It was easily one of my favorite scenes in the film. And there's a lot of really good scenes in this film. The de-aged Nick Cage that is everything you've ever thought Nick Cage was and ever will be is hilarious. Just watching Nick Cage argue with Nick Cage is, I'd watch the entire film of that. I really would. I would literally watch an entire movie of de-aged Nick Cage talking to aged Nick Cage all the time. It's great.
So Benjamin, would you say that Nick Cage, making out with Nick Cage, does anything for you sexually?
Sexually, no. Humorously, absolutely. Wow, that was. There's a lot of things I didn't expect, and that was definitely one of them. no one in their right mind could have prepared me for Nick Cage making out with Nick Cage.
It was pretty shocking, really.
I think I looked away, and some of that was I was laughing, but some of it was more like, I don't know that I should be watching this. It was literally uncomfortable.
Because it was so aggressive.
It was. It's just such a great joke of like, yeah, Nick Cage loves himself. Like, it's so funny and it's so indulgent. But it's done so well. It's so funny. I wasn't ready for it. But then they delivered it, and I was like, yes, okay, all right, I'm into this. I shouldn't be.
Because it's framed in a way with it that it's almost a bit rapey. It's you're like,
it is a little bit, yeah.
You're like, is the one Nick Cage okay with this? He looks to be struggling a bit, you know. It's right. Before he sort of leans into it, then
yeah. Oh yeah, there's just so many great moments like that where you know it just. The movie even opens with Nick Cage doing a cold read in a restaurant to a scriptwriter, a screenplay writer, a producer, or something like that.
It's a director, I think.
A director, that's right. Yeah. And so he does this cold read, even though he's told he doesn't need to, and he just does it. And you're just like, what is happening? But I want all of this. This is so ridiculous. And then, of course, it all ties back into the end of the film where he delivers that same monologue. In a real life situation, and everybody else is like, what is happening? And it's so good. Again, I don't know if you've ever wanted this, but in your wildest dreams, did you ever think you'd see Nick Cage try to do a Boston accent as a Boston gangster, a la Mark Wahlberg? It's weird, yeah. And it's great, and it's so funny.
And that's what's, I think, the best part about it is that it's Nick Cage sort of referencing that he's not great at accents. You know,
yes, right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's so much of that throughout this film. And it does. I think the film genuinely has a lot of heart. You can tell that as much as they are kind of all collectively, poking a bit of fun at Nick Cage's career, it's all done in jest, right? It's all done in good spirits. Nobody is trying to be malicious here. And I think being able to include Nick Cage into that, when Nick Cage is like, yeah, I could look back at some dumb decisions I've made. I could make some jokes about this. I think that all kind of makes it feel more like we are going to celebrate this actor. Genuinely, this film actually made me a bigger fan of Nick Cage. And I don't necessarily have the issue that a lot of people do. I'm not going to say everything he does is great, but I respect somebody who, like I said, never, ever phones it in. Good, for good, bad, or worse, you know, you're never going to get less than everything Nick Cage has. And I think that this film does a really good job in just kind of paying homage to that and really respecting Nick Cage while also making fun of a lot of things that we've all made fun of forever. And I feel like this movie is one of those things where, like, love him or hate him, you're probably still going to like this film because it has everything that you love about Nick Cage, but everything that you might hate about Nick Cage and make fun of, they do for you so you can get in on the joke. And it's just a good balance of all of that.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, the references to Nick Cage, mostly, especially with his films, they're all from a place of like people are fans. You know what I mean? Like the characters in the movie that are watching Nick Cage in things are fans of the movie they're watching. So it's never malicious. It's all in reverence. Yeah. So
I do want to get a little bit more in depth, not too much. I don't want to spend too much time on this because, again, they're very kind of underutilized here. But when we're talking about misgivings, I really didn't care for the way that the CIA agent thing. I didn't care for the way that whole plot played out because when they first get introduced, those two are very funny. They actually have really good chemistry, Berowitz and Tiffany Haddish. Like, they're very good together. They interact with Nick Cage really well. And you can tell that they're very excited to be a part of this film. But the way that they kind of fizzle out. So what ends up happening is they are expecting somebody else to come to this island because Javi is supposed to be this billionaire drug lord that's kidnapped one of the governor's daughters so that he can kind of usurp the government and take control over it. Obviously, that's not true. Right out of the gate, as soon as you meet Javi, you're like, well, this is a red herring. And it turns out to be his cousin, which the minute you meet his cousin, you're like, well, that guy's a bastard. He's just kind of like, yeah, no, it's him. He's the bad guy, clearly. But obviously you got to have some tension through the whole film. So the whole time it's Nick Cage thinking that Javi is worse than he actually is. But Javi is really just genuinely a super fan. He's not connected to the actual family. So that's how that all kind of gets set up. And so the CIA is trying to kind of, you know, uncover whatever it is he's doing so that they can, you know, find the girl. That's the whole charge for Nick Cage. Nick Cage has to find this kidnapped girl. And while all of that functions very well within the framework of what we're looking at, they just kind of die. Like, it, I don't know how else to explain it, because once everything becomes discovered, the cousin knows that the CIA is there. He knows where to find them. He basically sends people over, kills them, and then that's it. They just, they're done. They're done for the rest of the movie, and we never see them again.
Yeah. In fact, the one is already dead when everyone right? gets there.
Right?
You know, whereas Tiffany gets a moment to be heroic before dying.
Yeah, yeah.
The other guy's just, he's just dead. He's already dead. Yeah. And there's a deleted scene somewhere.
There has to be. There absolutely they had to have had more screen time. And but for the sake of keeping it under, I think they cut out a lot of stuff for them, because personally, in a better script on paper, not that the script is bad, it's just, you know, it's got some issues. In a better script, they would have made it to the end, right? They would have been a part of the play that they do, where, you know, they because the cousin is supposed to set up this deal with some Italian drug lord that he's never met. And so Nick Cage dons this Italian accent and the gray hair and the beard. It's absolutely drop dead hilarious. It's so funny and so stupid. It's so ridiculous. But it would have been much better if they would have been a part of that ploy, because all of their resources have basically been cut off because they've been discovered. So now they actually have to rely on Nick Cage as an actor to get them out of this situation. And so I feel like including them in the climax of the film in the third act, I actually feel that probably would have served the film better. And they're very funny in this film. They really are. With the few times that they have, they're very good and they're very funny. And they have a whole scene where they're both trying to coach Nick Cage through drug inducing himself with like a bunch of different drugs to like put him to sleep and then wake him up. And like, it's very great. And so I feel like there's a big gap that's missing there where they don't make it to the end. And you kind of feel like they should have.
Yeah, well, I like to imagine that it was there and it was filmed, but in editing, you know, the director was like, "Hey, did you know Benjamin Baker's going to see this? Yeah, no, he's got a small bladder, mate. So take those scenes, put them on the cutting room floor. Yeah, keep it under 2 hours.
Listen, Tommy boy, I respect you. I really do. I respect you thinking of me when it comes to this film, and it's all well and fine, but I feel like you could have kept it at the time, kept it at the runtime, still given those two more to do. All I wanted was for them to make it to the end. That's pretty much it. That's all I wanted. Just the fact that they die so unceremoniously, where it's just, they're basically just deleted from the film and have no impact on how the resolution comes about. It's just kind of, I don't know. It's just, to me, it just feels like poor writing, because they're a part of the setup. They're the whole reason, or at least one of the major reasons that the film happens in the first place. So to kind of delete them from the resolution just feels a bit, I don't know. It feels a bit haphazard, a bit slapdash, where they just kind of like didn't utilize all the tools that they had. Not that the conclusion is bad, but by any means, it just, that was one of those things where I was like, oh, I kind of wished I got a bit more from them as we start to kind of run this thing down. So,
yeah, I mean, look, if anything, we could have gotten to the island faster, and then you could have had more of them at the end. Because yeah, that's what, one of the things the film does have going on is there's sort of a lot going on with Nick Cage, in the sense that, like, it's like his career is fading out. He's neglectful of his family. He's divorced and all this other stuff. And so it's really like, it's on top of being a buddy comedy, and it's very meta, like him and Pedro's characters, they're sort of workshopping and writing a script together, and the script is basically what's happening in the movie. Yeah.
They're basically writing The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Yeah. And so you've got that going on. You've got the weird CIA subplot. You've got Nicolas Cage needing to be a better father. You need him to, you know, reignite his passion for acting and reignite his career. So there's a lot going on, and not all of it is given equal time. In fact, some things, you know, like Nick Cage being a better father at the end, it's just sort of like, yeah, look, we're going to watch Paddington 2. I'm a better parent, you know, yeah. And it's sort of like, yeah, you know, it's just tacked on, but yeah. It's fine because that's not, you know, you're focused, like you said, you're so focused on how funny the movie is that you sort of let the imperfections in the actual story, you let them go.
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah, I agree with you. And it's actually pretty amazing that they're able to pack in so many subplots in such a tight, quick narrative. Because you're right, I do feel like they should have gotten to the island quicker. But at the same time, the film is less than 2 hours. So, you know, they kind of move at a pretty rapid pace. And I think they highlight the best parts. Like I said, the best parts are watching Nick Cage and Pedro Pascal work through the script, develop this buddy cop comedy thing that they've got going on. You know, the whole scene where he's got the golden guns and they're pointing it at him, and Pedro Pascal is like, "I love you," and then Nick Cage is like, "I love you too." It's just it's so natural. Like, you've watched their relationship bud, and it's so great. All of that is fantastic. So I get why they put that at the forefront. But you're right. There's a lot of things kind of surrounding that where they all just kind of felt like, eh. This is funny enough that no one's going to care. And it's like, well, we do care. And yes, it is funny that we can kind of overlook it. But honestly, you could have had a damn near perfect film. Like, you could have had a 5 out of 5 if you'd have just made those things a bit stronger. Just a little bit. You don't have to add more runtime. Just make them a bit more purposeful. Either get to them quicker, cut things out, whatever. Just rearrange it a bit to where it does feel a bit more cohesive overall.
Yeah.
And then I honestly would have given it a 5 out of 5. I really would have.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very good. It's very good. So you should absolutely see it.
Yes. I highly recommend this film. I've seen a couple of people that are like, "Oh God, here comes Nick Cage." And I can't stress this enough. Even if you've got that sentiment about the rest of his films, I highly recommend you see this. And even if you feel a certain way about Pedro Pascal, where you don't find him very interesting, he will change your mind here. He absolutely will change the way you feel about what he can do, because that man can turn up the charm. My God. Yeah, they are the absolute standouts. They're so good in this movie. It's very funny, and I highly recommend it. When it comes out, please go see this movie. It's very, very good.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, this has been Cineblokes. I'm Benjamin Baker.
I'm Kalen Burrows.
And we will see you after the next film.